This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Some people pay other people to turn a wrench, swap their oil filter. Me, DIY, all day. This isn't convenience. It's confidence. Purelator 20K oil filters. Clean oil, more miles. Over 99% filter to perfection. Only at Walmart.com or select Walmart stores. Purelator. Keep it purring.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
When Rulon Jeffs died in September of 2002, his son Warren did not grieve. He inherited. Within a week of his father's death, Warren Jeffs stood before the windows of the man who had led the fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints for nearly two decades. Women Warren had grown up calling mother and delivered a message that had nothing to do with mourning. You women will live as if father is still alive and in the next room. That's how he talked. Or does talk. He's creepy. Within days, he married all but two of them. One woman refused the arrangement and was told she would never be permitted to marry anyone ever again. Another, Rebecca Wall, fled the FLDS compound entirely, choosing exile over becoming her stepson's wife. I mean, it's really creepy. I mean, think about this. I mean, it's like these people were like mothers to him somewhat, and all of a sudden it's like, and now we shall be lovers and friends.
Tell me again, can we be lovers and friends in the FLDS?
Original lyrics to Usher's song, but they thought that might be a bit much. It's like Kids Bop, you know, where they change the lyrics to songs to make them kid-friendly. We'll make the FLDS version of song. Oh, there's a bit. Whew, I think I might play with that a little bit online. Make the FLDS-friendly version of songs. Oh, we could have fun there. All right, anyway, take a moment with all of that. A son standing over his dead father's legacy, claiming the man's wives as his own. You are stepmom one day, you are lover the next. And framing it as a divine instruction. God said, you shall be mine. Not grief, not tradition, a hostile takeover dressed in scripture. And if you think that moment was when Warren Jeffs became dangerous, you're off by about 20 years. Because by the time Rulon's heart stopped, Warren had already spent two decades perfecting the only skill that ever mattered to him. Control! This is part one of a five-part Hidden Killer series on Warren Jeffs and the FLDS, tracing the full arc from a schoolroom in Salt Lake to a prison cell in Texas, and the trail of broken families in between. To understand the machine Warren Jeffs built, you need to understand the world he was born into, the fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the place where anything good goes to die. I added that part. It's not the mainstream LDS church. They're just too lovely. The two separated more than a century ago, after the LDS Church officially banned polygamy in 1890 to secure Utah statehood. Not because they wanted to, because they wanted to be a state. The FLDS rejected that ban. They believed plural marriage was the path to the highest level of heaven. At least that's what a bunch of guys said back then. What do you mean you want to get rid of our R. Kelly lifestyle? What are we going to... No. That's how it should be like this. Nobody can take this away. Tell them God said it's good. Men will say all sorts of crazy, horrible, stupid shit to get some. That a man needed multiple wives to reach exaltation. Wouldn't that be today considered almost like an addiction to certain content? It's like, this is too extreme, buddy. Like, this ain't normal life. By the middle of the 20th century, the FLDS had carved out a remote, insular existence in the twin border towns of Colorado City, Arizona, and Hilldale, Utah, a community they called Short Creek. Not to be confused with Short Bus. Isolated from the outside world, governed by their own rules, and largely ignored by law enforcement, Short Creek became a closed system, a place where the prophet's word was the only law that mattered. Warren's father, Rulon Jeffs, claimed the title of FLDS prophet in 1986. One of his first acts was to dissolve the church's governing council, eliminating any check on his authority and concentrating all decision-making power in himself. The number of wives he accumulated is a bit disputed. Some sources place the count around 20, others significantly higher. But what is not disputed is that he fathered dozens of children across those marriages. More importantly, Rulon controlled the United Effort Plan, a communal land trust valued at over $100 million that held virtually every home and parcel of land in Short Creek. Every family in the community lived on UEP property. Every home belonged to the prophet. If you questioned the man who controlled the trust, you were not just risking your standing in the church, you were risking the roof over your children's heads. That was the empire Warren was raised to inherit, but he did not sit around waiting for it. He started building his own power base while his father was still alive inside a schoolroom. In 1976, at 21 years old and carrying nothing more than a high school diploma, Warren Jeffs was made principal of Alta Academy, the FLDS private school housed in his father's compound near Little Cottonwood Canyon in the Salt Lake Valley. The school's motto was printed where everyone could see it: perfect obedience produces perfect faith. Warren ran that school for the next two decades. He taught world history, priesthood history. Who didn't have priesthood history? Damn, that was a hard class. Algebra, even home economics for the girls. He led devotionals every morning. He directed the choir. Yearbook photos show a thin, bespeckled young man sledding with students and cutting up in school plays. From a distance, it looked like a dedicated educator building a community. Up close, it was something else entirely. Former students describe a man who used every tool available, fear, guilt, isolation, surveillance, to shape children into instruments of obedience. That sounds rather familiar. Duggars! It does. It sounds like the damn Duggars. Doesn't it? Jeff separated students from their parents' influence systematically. He conducted private interviews with children as young as second grade, calling them to his upstairs office at the top of a long staircase. Sessions, former students say they dreaded. He encouraged kids to report on their own families, collecting information he could use against anyone who might someday challenge him. And then there were what former students called the destruction lectures, graphic, terrifying sermons about the coming annihilation of the outside world. Many of us may remember these from other fun religions such as Catholicism, Lutheran, baptism, anything really, you know, where happy Sunday, let's learn about the end times. Delivered to rooms full of children, blood and gore, bodies in the Salt Lake Valley, detailed descriptions of what would happen to anyone outside of their dedicated faith, them being FLDS, every religion, most of the Christianity versions in the United States or around the world practice some version of the destruction workbooks with children. I remember my fun times in Sunday school in a Lutheran church of drawing such fun scenes as Saul's wife turning into a pillar of salt because she decided to look back at her town and livelihood being burned to the ground. And because of that mortal sin of looking back at what the hell's going on behind me, she gets turned into a pillar of salt. You know, hey kids, can I borrow the light blue? I think that might be what the salt looks like. Little did I know, it's probably more yellowish. But at the time, I used light blue. I know, probably a mortal sin. You pick the wrong color to draw the salt-like color.
on Saul's wife as the flames came down.
I mean, this is the shit. This is like, I remember doing that like literally in the preschool classroom. And that was like considered fairly mainstream and fairly light compared to this shit show over here. I can only imagine their coloring books. I'd love to hear if you survived this. What did your coloring books look like? That'd be a very interesting webpage. Just coloring books from fundamentalist Christian organizations. Several former students reported nightmares lasting years. One recalls Jeff telling them multiple times that the current school year would be their last because the destructions were imminent. He recorded those lectures and then sold the tapes to members. And over time, those recordings became foundational texts in the FLDS canon, a library of fear assembled by a school principal who had no credentials and total authority over every child in the building. Many of his brides came from former students. Girls he had groomed since childhood became his wives that he claimed in adulthood. The pipeline between Alta Academy and the marriage altar was direct and deliberate. The school did not close until 1998 when Rulon Jeffs received what he called a revelation that the 2002 Winter Olympics would trigger the destruction of Salt Lake City. He ordered his followers to leave the valley and relocate to Short Creek. Warren went with them and became his father's right hand, the enforcer, the gatekeeper, the man who made decisions when Rulon's health began failing from a series of strokes. By the time Rulon died, Warren was already running the church in everything but name. And by the way, the Olympics came and went and the world didn't end. This is the part that matters most for everything that comes after. Warren Jeffs did not become a predator when he inherited his father's church. He spent 20 years rehearsing in a classroom. He learned how to make children afraid. He learned how to make them dependent. He learned how to make them believe that he was the only thing standing between them and destruction. You know, like the Duggars. And anybody with the authority to stop him ever walked in and said enough. Nobody. You keep doing your thing. Everybody's got their right to their religion. And, you know, doesn't matter how many people you're damaging along the way. When Rulon died and Warren assumed the title of president and prophet from the FLDS, the community changed almost overnight. Within months, Jeff expelled a group of men from Short Creek, including the town's mayor, and reassigned their wives and children to men he considered more faithful. This was not a one-time purge. It became the standard operating procedure of Warren Jeffs FLDS. Any man who questioned his authority, who hesitated when given an instruction, who showed even the appearance of independent thought, could find himself stripped of his family by sundown. Wives were given new husbands, children were handed to new fathers, and because every home in Short Creek sat on UEP land controlled by Jeffs, the expelled men also lost the roof over their heads. One declaration from the prophet, and an entire life evaporated. The takeover sent fractures through the broader FLDS community. Winston Blackmore, the long-serving bishop of the FLDS branch in bountiful British Columbia, refused to follow Warren, and more than half of the Canadian members left the church rather than submit to the new prophet. He's just too crazy. It's like, at what point, like, where's the bar? Where is the bar? Like, it's amusing to me where they finally go, this might be a bit much. This guy did all this shit over here, but this guy, a little bit much. Jeffs excommunicated Blackmore without hesitation. The message was clear. Loyalty was absolute, or it was nothing. Marriage became Warren's primary weapon. He held sole authority to perform marriages within the FLDS. No member could marry without his personal approval. He used that power in a way a dictator uses patronage, to reward the loyal and punish the disobedient. He arranged marriages between teenage girls and men decades older, men who would owe their families entirely to Jeff's favor. He taught that a devoted member needed at least three wives to reach heaven. Three! And the more wives a man accumulated, the closer he moved towards God. Marriage in the FLDS under Warren Jeffs was not a sacrament. It was a transaction, and the prophet set the price. Among the wives Warren claimed from his father's household was Naomi Jessup. She was originally married to Rulon at 18. Under Warren, she became his closest confidant, his scribe, his favorite wife, the person who documented his daily activities and recorded his teachings. She would later be sitting next to him in the vehicle the night the FBI finally caught up with him. Naomi's role revealed the blueprint Warren was following. He didn't just take over his father's church. He replicated his father's entire domestic architecture and made it tighter, more personal, more completely dependent on his voice alone or the inner voices in his head. And then there was the property. Through the UEP Trust, Jeffs controlled every home and piece of land in Short Creek. There was no separation between church real estate and personal shelter. Obedience wasn't just a spiritual exception. It was the cost of having a place to sleep. If you fell out of line, you didn't just face excommunication and the loss of your external salvation. You faced homelessness, the separation from your wife and children, and permanent exile from the only world you had ever known. Warren Jeffs built a system in which every form of security a person could have, family, home, community, salvation, was held in one man's hand. And the cost of keeping those things was your complete and silent submission. Then in 2004, the basement came back for him. Warren's nephew, Brent Jeffs, filed a lawsuit alleging that Warren had assaulted him repeatedly as a child at Alta Academy. Beginning when Brent was 5 or 6 years old, the suit named Warren and two other uncles. According to the complaint, the assaults took place in the basement of the school, the same building where Warren had spent 20 years shaping children into instruments of compliance. The lawsuit alleged that the pattern of abuse stretched back to when Warren was 14 years old. Brent's brother, Klain, had made similar accusations before Brent came forward. Klain took his own life. Another brother later died of an overdose. In time, two of Warren Jeff's own children would step forward with similar allegations. The Alta Academy was not just where Warren Jeff's learned to manipulate and control children. According to the people who survived it, it was where he discovered that the system would protect him, no matter what he did. It was the laboratory. Everything that came after, the forced marriages, the expulsions, the empire, grew from what was happening in that building, in that basement. By 2004, Warren Jeffs controlled the marriages, the property, the money, and the spiritual lives of thousands of people across multiple states. He had consolidated more personal power than any FLDS leader in the church's history. But the cracks were forming. Lawsuits were being filed. Former members were talking to reporters. The lost boys, teenage boys, expelled from the community to reduce competition for brides, were organizing legal action. The walls Warren had built were strong, but the pressure from outside was growing. So he did what cornered authoritarians always do. He built a fortress in a remote stretch of West Texas outside a small town called El Dorado. Jeffs quietly purchased 1,700 acres of land under the cover story of a hunting retreat. He named it the Yearning for Zion Ranch, after a song he had written. Coming up next on the countdown, the latest from Warren Jeffs. But first, this long-distance dedication. It comes to us from a man in Florida prison named Joseph. He writes, "Dear Casey." And he began relocating his most devoted followers there, away from the reporters, away from the courtrooms, away from anyone who might ask uncomfortable questions about what was happening behind the walls. The man who learned control in his schoolroom was building his own kingdom in the desert. And inside that kingdom, the only rules that would apply were the ones he wrote. Warren Jeffs did not seize power in a single dramatic act. He grew into it quietly over decades. A school principal with no credentials who became a prophet. A son who claimed his dead father's wives before the body was cold. A man who figured out early and completely that if you control someone's family, their home, their education, and their God, you do not need force. they will stay because they cannot imagine anywhere else to go. And by the time they realize the walls are not there to protect them, it's far too late to leave. We got more coming in part two of this series. We're going to go inside the machine Jeff's built, the forced marriages, the boys thrown away, and the phrase every girl in the FLDS learned to live by. Keep sweet. Your thoughts, your experiences maybe, in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love to hear from you and get your thoughts and opinions. All right. We'll continue our conversation then. Part two drops tomorrow. Press subscribe so you don't miss it. If you want early access to it, become a member on YouTube and you'll get in on that. All right. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U.
Did you say someone got shot?
November 2006, a college football star on his way to NFL dreams, gunned down in broad daylight.
Just bawling, crying, and he said, Coach, they killed him.
No weapon, missing witnesses, conflicting accounts, and for years, no arrest.
She insinuated that the Miami PD had done nothing, and it became a little bit more accusatory.
The case goes cold, rumors spread, and the truth gets buried until now.
His world could come crashing down. According to him, it was over.
The ending, something no one saw coming, because this story isn't over yet. From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U. Binge the full season right now, wherever you get your podcasts.